Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
I think for many of us, getting taken advantage of in a scam situation is embarrassing. We think we should know better, even though the crooks have so many more tools at their disposal and are really professionals at what they're doing. But it's important that we talk about the situations we encounter so others can avoid them and so consumer advocates know what's happening around the state. We're lucky to have a great department working on consumer protection issues here in Wisconsin. They compile reports from folks around the state and get the information out to the rest of us. And every month or so, they come by to share those resources with us here. Sandy Chalmers is the administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Sandy, thanks so much for coming.
Good morning, Judith.
And Michelle Reinen is director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Always great to have you here, Michelle.
Thanks for having us back, Judith.
Well, it's amazing how many things we always have to talk about and how many things that listeners have to share, too. And we definitely want to answer questions. Just so folks know, right now, our email is down, so that's not a good option to join in, but you can still call 1-800-642-1234. Again, that's 800-642-1234. And you can also post a question or comment on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mealer Show. And Mealer is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. And we'll let you know if the email is up a little later in the show. We have plenty to talk about that we had already planned for, but Michelle, you were just mentioning before the program that there is a new concern, a security breach with LinkedIn and eHarmony that's going to affect a lot of people.
Yeah, just in the last day, we got notification through the media that LinkedIn passwords were hacked, and this has also affected eHarmony.
Right. There are about 7.5 million people involved in this data breach. LinkedIn, of course, is a business networking website with about 160 million users. And eHarmony, of course, very well-known dating site. These businesses are reporting about 7.5 million passwords have been hacked and apparently posted online. The lesson here for people who spend a lot of time online is that, first of all, if you are a LinkedIn or eHarmony user, of course, immediately change your password if you haven't done so already.
And would people have been notified in some way if their password had been compromised? Or
these companies, if they haven't done that yet, are surely in the process of notifying users.
So people, whether or not they've heard anything specifically about their own, if they belong to either site, go and change those passwords.
And the bigger lesson here for consumers is, you know, this is a good time to think about password security in general. When you use the same password for several accounts, you're taking quite a risk, especially when you share an email password with shopping accounts, dating service accounts, LinkedIn accounts. So be sure to change up your passwords. You should use an especially strong password for accounts that have financial implications, banking, shopping. But make sure that you change up your passwords, change them frequently, and please try to avoid using the same password for more than one account.
Which, of course, is tempting because it's easier to remember then.
Sure.
But
sure.
There's a cost associated.
It can get very confusing. Doing things like using one word followed by a different number for each account is easy for the user to remember. It's also easy for hackers to get through. On previous shows, we've talked a lot about the different kinds of applications that are out there, things like LastPass and different applications that help you store and encrypt your passwords. So consumers might want to take another look at using those. But, you know, this is a very extensive data breach. There's some speculation already about a company like LinkedIn that has grown so rapidly. Have they been taking adequate precautions and mm-hmm. using best practices and protecting the security of the information that people post online. So,
and let's just recap kind of some of the ways to make a password more strong. It's good, as I recall, one of the last times you all were on, there was talk that if it's a word that's easily found in the dictionary, that's probably not a great word, but if it's a word that's something that wouldn't be probably not in some kind of program that just runs through at a very rapid rate, a bunch of different combinations.
Right. Use a combination of uppercase and lowercase numbers, letters, include numbers and characters like exclamation points, and do avoid using dictionary words.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the longer it is, the harder it is to be hacked or, mm-hmm. or obtained by someone else, but you don't want it too long right. that you can't remember it either.
And also, I've heard that you can use, if there's a word that's easy for you to remember that is a dictionary word, if you change, say, an O to a zero in it or something like that, where you can still remember it, but it's really no longer technically that same word, that's another way to kind of use the digits, the numeric digits, as a way to make it more complicated too.
Mm-hmm. Here's another way of looking at this LinkedIn data breach. The hackers now have access to any kind of information that you've posted on LinkedIn, professional contacts, including email addresses. And when people get emails in a business setting from a business name, they tend to be more trusting than opposed to something that you
sure.
get on your home account from somebody you've never heard of. So if you are on LinkedIn or do use eHarmony, just take a very close look at the kind of emails that you're getting mm-hmm. in the next few weeks.
Great.
It's also another great opportunity just for all accounts that you are a part of online to take inventory of what information you're out there sharing. What do they now have access to now that they have your password? What are you storing online on what you think are secure servers and things? How much personally identifiable information do you have out there? And just take stock of that and take an inventory and maybe make some changes if you have too much out there. And just take time to review all the privacy policies of those things that you are a part of to make sure that they're at a security level that you are comfortable with based on the information that they are holding for you. And again, be diligent about changing your passwords regularly if they really obtain personally identifiable information.
Yeah. Well, hopefully anyone listening who has a LinkedIn and or eHarmony account has, while they've been listening, changed their password. So hopefully not too much fallout from that. Let's go to the phones because we always have a lot of folks that have questions and comments. John in Milwaukee is up first. Hi, John.
Hi. I'm on our the no-call list that the state of Wisconsin has. But for some reason, usually around once a week, I get a call from somebody trying to buy my timeshare, and I don't have a timeshare, and I've told them I don't have a timeshare, and I told them to take it off the list, but they still keep calling. And then the second one is I get a call from a credit card company once a week, asking me to lower my rate, or there's some spiel they do, but I have credit cards, but I don't have any outstanding debt, so I've never worried about it at all. But they call me once a week also, and it's just a computerized call. The timeshare ones are actually a person that I can talk to, but I'd like to get rid of both of them, but the no-call list doesn't seem to stop it.
All right. Sandy?
Well, to start with, both these callers are breaking Wisconsin law and likely violating federal law as well. The credit card interest rate reduction phone calls, that's a well-known ongoing scam, and we've all gotten those calls in endless variations.
Is that the Rachel calls, or is that something else?
They're okay. Rachel and very similar calls.
Rachel and her friends.
The companies behind those calls claim to have special relationships with credit cards, and what they do in reality is, while you're on the phone with them, call your credit card company and say, hey, would you lower Judith's interest rate? Well, you could do that yourself,
right.
And they end up charging you several hundred dollars to do that. The timeshare caller is very interesting. And if you have told this person not to call you back and they continue to call, that's a violation of federal law. I would recommend that you file a complaint with us because we'd like to follow up with this company. And what we do, depending on the specifics of the situation, we either investigate the company and take enforcement action, or we send them a letter warning them to cease and desist illegal practices in the state of Wisconsin, and they quit. Mm-hmm. So, but we would like to hear from you.
Great. Thank you very much.
And John, when the timeshare person calls, are you able to grab a phone number?
Well, I don't have caller ID on the phone that they're calling, but I'll try and talk to them and find out who the company actually is.
All right. If you can find out a callback number from them or what name they're going by, just something that'll help give us some sort of lead with that, that'd be great. So now would be a good time to give out our 800 number.
Yes, please.
So John could file that complaint. You could call 1-800-422-7128 and get our hotline and ask for a complaint form, or you can just go to our website and get a complaint form that way, and that is datcp.wisconsin.gov.
And Wisconsin is WI.
You can use WUI or you can spell it out.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. And we do have a link to that on our Facebook page. And there was a caller, Steve from Appleton, called to comment on the irony that we ask listeners to comment on Facebook when we don't really know what Facebook does with our information. And of course, you know, we would not want anyone to sign up for Facebook just to be able to interact with us. But there are a lot of people that use Facebook. And, you know, certainly there are concerns about privacy and how data is being used, but you know, some people decide to take that.
Well,
that
Facebook
risk.
Got itself into trouble with the Federal Trade Commission a few months ago. The Federal Trade Commission is the nation's consumer mm-hmm. protection agency. Remember when you use these social networking websites, and we all do, you know, they're great, but usually the privacy settings default to the most open setting. So we advise that you go in and make sure that those settings are what you want them to be, whether you want every posting shared with the world or just with your friends or your close friends or mm-hmm. whatever it is. But do check those privacy settings.
And certainly there are millions and millions and millions of people in the U.S. worldwide that are using Facebook. I think to a certain extent, when you decide to sign up for something like that or web-based email, whatever, to a certain extent, you're acknowledging that there are risks, and even if there are great policies in place, there are breaches that happen. And so I think, you know, a lot of people decide, well, yes, there is a risk, but it's a risk that I want to take to be able to use these services. So, but definitely a good point from Stephen Appleton. Donna in Eau Claire is next. Hi, Donna.
Hi. I want to let you know about a scam that we darn near got caught up in, but luckily we're alert. And people need to watch this. This letter came from Advanced Structural Settlement. That sounds really big. Out of Canada. Congratulations. The check that's enclosed for $3,989 is yours. Deposit it. And when you call us and let us know you've deposited it, we'll send you another check for $146,000 minus taxes. Now, guess where that money comes out of? This check that would be deposited is no good in the first place. And it says on this form that we're supposed to send in to them saying that we got the check and everything is right. They've got us living in Kings Park, New York. The address on the check is wrong. Our name is right. And the interesting thing is that our last name ends with two N's. Rarely are they used. They got them. So they've got our name off of something. But we talked to this claims agent that was on here with a very deep accent, I might add to that. And he said, oh, it's all legal. Go ahead, deposit that check. That's all your money. We talked to the post office about this, and they said they're very difficult to track down, and they really can do very little about it. It's really the consumer, the you and I, being very alert and very aware. And the return on this check is Agridant Incorporated out of Michigan, I think it is.
All right. Let's get Sandy and Michelle's take on that. So how does this scam work? Why do they want you to deposit that bad check?
Well, there are a number of variations on these scams. Some are sweepstakes scams. Some are work-at-home scams. Some are the Nigerian prince type scams, but they all come back to this fake check. And you're asked to deposit a check. Sometimes it looks very real, so real that a bank teller can't tell it's fake.
Mm-hmm.
Often drawn on well-known banks using Bank of America, Bank of America account. But what happens under federal law is that you deposit the check, the bank teller gives you the money, and you send it to these crooks. Well, it can take some time for the bank to figure out that it's a fake check, no good. But under federal law, you're responsible to the bank. So if it's a $5,000 check, you're responsible for that.
And so how does that benefit the scammers?
Because you basically gave the scammer your money.
Okay. Okay.
They often in that scam ask you to, cash a check, give some of the money to this person over here who is connected to the scammer.
Okay.
And keep a little for yourself.
Okay.
So then the consumer thinks they're getting something
They think they're getting more and giving part of it. And in fact, the only money that's being exchanged is what the consumer is giving to that person associated with the scam.
And I think the most common variation of this scam is the one that Donna explained, where they tell you you've won a fabulous prize. There was a woman, I believe, in the Fond du Lac area who was told that she won $250,000 in a Mercedes-Benz. They sent her a check and said, here's a check to cover the taxes. All you have to do is deposit it and wire mm-hmm. us the money back. And of course, she was stuck
right.
with I believe it was $36,000.
Wow. Well, thanks for that call, Donna. Did you actually file a report with the Bureau?
I have not filed a report with the Bureau. We went to the post office because we figured it was through the government and the mails, and they said they couldn't do anything, and that's as far as it went. Should I be going to your department and filing through them?
If you file a report with us, what will happen is that we will have that information available for other consumers who call to check it out ahead of time. We'd be able to show them that others have had this and this check, and this is what it turned out to be. You're right in that it's international in nature, and we jurisdiction-wise wouldn't be able to do anything either, but it'd be available for us to share and compile into reports to educate others.
And where do I contact you for that?
You can call our 800 number, and that is 1-800-422-7128, or you can go to our website and download a complaint form there, and that is datcp.wisconsin.gov.
Thanks for that call, Donna. And you can join the conversation by calling our 800 number, 800-642-1234. Again, 800-642-1234. You can also leave a question or comment on our Facebook page. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller, talking about consumer protection with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen. We're talking about consumer protection with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. And we'd love to hear from you with questions, comments. You can call 1-800-642-1234. And, just going back to that last call, it seems like it's a good rule to follow, Sandy, that if you're ever asked to send money in order to receive money, you should just get out of there as soon as you can.
There is no legitimate reason for somebody who is giving you money to ask you to send them money first. And that is at the heart of many, many scams. When people win sweepstakes and they win lotteries, there is no request for you to pay the taxes first. That's a scam.
Right.
But in general, this prizes and sweepstakes scam is on the upswing. And a lot of these scams are coming out of Jamaica. That's an emerging area that we've seen.
And you're able to tell that because of the area code where the
right,
calls are coming
right.
from, which
mm-hmm.
is 876. And what kind of scams are you seeing that are coming out of Jamaica?
Well, They take a number of forms. Of course, these criminals are very smart and keeping the stories changing. But usually they tell you that you've won a sweepstakes and they ask you to go to Walmart or somewhere and buy one of those prepaid debit cards. Usually they're called Money Pack or Green Dot cards. And they ask you to read the number on the back of the Green Dot card. You know, they'll usually ask for $500 or something. Well, of course, when they have the number from the card, they have the money. But we're warning people when they get calls from that 876 area code, you know, that's so close to 866, which is a common toll-free number. It's 876. Those calls originate from Jamaica. You will pay a hefty toll if you call the number back. So just be careful about that. The other thing about these Jamaican scams is that these criminals are very, very aggressive. And once they get money from you, they will continue to call and threaten you and threaten your family. Sometimes they claim to be from Publishers Clearing House. but they are so, so smart with using technology. They will say, we're on our way to your house right now to give you your Publisher's Clearinghouse prize. And they'll say what street they're on. You know, we're just around the corner. We're turning the corner onto Smith Ridge Road or whatever it is. And we believe that they're using Google Maps, to figure that out.
Since so they can describe the street they're being, they're able to pick up specifics.
We're at the White House now. You know, we're at the Gray House now.
Wow. So they really, I mean, I think, you know, I think people intellectually, you know that there really is, there are things that are just too good to be true and they're probably not. But then there is that emotional element. And when they can throw in those details like, oh, we're right by the elementary school on the corner or something. I mean, it brings it into a much more real kind of sense to it.
Right. Everybody wants to be a winner and the crooks know that.
Right.
And these scams tend to play on people's emotions, and these crooks are very, very good at what they do.
They're professionals.
They're professional liars, and anything they can do to prey on people's vulnerabilities, they will.
Mm-hmm. And with this challenging economic time, Michelle, would you say that people are maybe a little more vulnerable than they might at other points?
Well, sure. As Sandy said, everybody wants to be a winner. And right now, some people really need to be a winner to make life easier if they are struggling. So there's that extra desire to have wanted to win and make it be true. So again, it's that too good to be true.
Right.
You know when you've entered a contest or a lottery. Things don't just fall out of the sky and happen randomly that someone else enters you into something. Mm-hmm. So you just really need to be alert and pay attention to those things and have an ounce of skeptical.
Be
skeptical.
Right, yeah. Well, let's go back to the phones and let's go to Martha in Muskego. Hi, Martha.
Hi. I just wanted to comment. The gentleman called earlier about the timeshare call. I've had those every week also, and we've been telling the person, we do not have a timeshare. Please stop calling us, and they just keep calling, so every week.
And how long has that been going on, Martha?
Oh, probably a couple months.
Wow. Yeah, is this something that you two, Michelle and Sandy, have heard about before? Or?
Well, we're finding out about it right now.
There you go.
Which is good. This is important for us to know. We've known that timeshare resale scams are on the rise because people are trying to ratchet down some of their debt and what they're doing for vacations and stuff and trying to sell timeshares if they've invested in that over time. And so resale's on the rise as far as people being out there making offers and scams that way. So it makes sense. Phone calls are following behind that, but we need to hear from consumers as we are today as to what the details are behind it. And as Sandy mentioned, these would be violations of no call as well. If these individuals are on the no-call list. I know the first gentleman mentioned that he was.
Right.
So, you know, again, it would be very beneficial for us if Martha could call our hotline and make sure that she files a complaint so we have the details about this and can follow up and see if we can get a company name or phone number to track it back.
Martha, have you been able to get a phone number when they call?
No, I haven't. And there's another call that we get every day, actually. It's an 888 number, and it's a long distance service. But they just, it rings and then it hangs up. So you know, they don't leave a message. We can't. And you pick it up, there's nobody there. So I don't know why they're calling us. Because if you can't get any information out of them, it doesn't, you know. And if they're not going to give you any information, it doesn't make sense to call us, I guess.
A lot of these telemarketing companies use something called a predictive dialer. And there are a certain number of live people in a boiler room, usually. And if all the people are busy on talking on a phone, that dialer will just hang up. Mm-hmm. So that's why there's nobody there to talk to.
Thanks for that call, Martha. And please do file that with the Bureau. And on the Facebook page, Nola had a follow-up to an earlier call also. She says the credit card company scam number is 202-595-9420. Insights scam. You have been involved with a charitable service that is using our services. And there are a couple different numbers that they use. So a couple more phone scams. And, you know, just to clarify how the no call list works, I mean, the no call list works when companies follow it, right? I mean, it's not a way to block certain calls. It's a way for you to express your preferences, but then the companies have to follow it. And I'm guessing that scammers are not too worried about following consumer preferences.
That's exactly right. I mean, we have a number, hundreds of legitimate telemarketing companies who are receiving the list, not calling mm-hmm. those who've registered. And it definitely works in those scenarios. But we have those who are choose to avoid it. We go after them and we pursue those for violations of no call. And then there's some international rings. And we have to deal with those issues as well and work together with our federal partners to see what we can do to crack down on them. But that does create some nuisance for consumers in receiving these calls. But by us compiling all this information throughout the nation, we find out more and mm-hmm. can educate consumers of what to avoid.
And there are very responsible companies that do respect and follow the no call list. So mm-hmm. we definitely want to, you know, give credit where credit is due.
About Nola's comment, she has a 202 area code, which is Washington, D.C.
Right.
These criminal groups that are calling, they will do anything to avoid being tracked down, of course. Most of them use internet technology, you know, and they can manipulate your caller ID to say anything. It can be anybody's number. And we heard not too long ago from a woman in southeastern Wisconsin whose number had been hijacked by the Rachel robocaller people, and she was getting...
No.
Very angry calls from people all over the country saying, Rachel, stop calling us.
I hope her name didn't happen to be Rachel, because that would be really hard to get out from under. Wow. Oh, that would be a nightmare.
You truly cannot trust your caller ID anymore.
Right. Someone in one of the recent programs when you were on said that sometimes it actually comes up and says scam.
Sure.
And how does that get on a caller ID?
We're not exactly sure, but again, it's people can obtain control of the caller ID through these spoofing technology.
Yeah, spoofing is.
And so, as Sandy mentioned, just don't trust the caller ID at this point.
All right.
The thing is, many people I've heard from who get that phone scam on their caller ID said, well, I picked it up just to see who it was. Well, of course, that's what they want you to do.
Right.
And they will do anything, say they're anyone, to part you from your money.
Well, and also, a lot of those calls are actually to verify if it is a real number, right? Because you said they're kind of doing mass dialing. And if you pick up, you move into the category of there's a live person that's going to be on this.
Right.
So.
And if you follow the directions to press 1 or 9, that identifies you as somebody who will respond to a fraudulent pitch.
Right.
So, and then that information becomes very valuable to criminals, and it's likely your number is likely to be resold to criminal rings throughout the world.
Yeah. Let's go to Rosie in Woodruff. She has a suggestion for some of our previous callers. Hi, Rosie.
Hi. Good morning. Just an in general way to deal with some nuisance calls. It doesn't always work. but I've had good, I mean, the process works. If it's the same person calling you relentlessly, and particularly talking about even if they just call and hang up or whatever, if you simply pick up the phone, and when you get a dial tone after you're done with them, whether you've spoken to someone or not, virtually every phone system has the ability to call block, and all you need to do is punch in *60 on your phone, and you can choose to put in a number to block. A lot of time these robocalls and things, you don't have something on your caller ID, you have the option to simply block the last caller. So if you don't know what the number was, it will block them from calling. And I'm just saying that that has helped me on some occasions where it's, you know, the relentless, the same coming from. Mm-hmm. I know some places are calling, there might have 10 people in a room and they're dialing from different numbers and things. But that has ended some really aggravating, relentless callers that won't stop for me. And it's just *60.
Yeah, that is a good idea. Make sure that you aren't being charged per number blocked. Some carriers do charge you or after a certain number. But the tactics some of these fraudulent telemarketers use are to just call through an area code over and over and over, trying to single out the live numbers. And, you know, they do come in waves. So if you can block that number, you're likely to save yourself two or three calls a day for the next couple of weeks.
Oh. Thanks for that suggestion, Rosie. I love how people call and share different information to help each other out on the show. Carol in Kenosha is next. Hi, Carol.
Good morning. I have a particular problem with magazine subscriptions. For 3 years now, I do not have a TV. I have my public radio, and I'm a reader. And I subscribe to quite a few magazines, but they constantly sell your name so that I'm getting besieged by different new magazines all the time. And also, in the last couple of years, every time you do respond and you subscribe to a magazine, in the tiny print in the bottom, it says, as a service to you, we will automatically renew this unless you tell us in writing to stop. I have a practice now where I will write cancel on one bill and return it, and I will not pay postage for any more. Mm-hmm. But you get terrible, insulting, gunning letters that you're enjoying our magazine now for 3 months, and we need to hear from you.
Well, let's see what Sandy and Michelle have to say about that. Are there a lot of problems with subscriptions like that?
Well, you do need to watch how long you've subscribed to something, because they start their renewal process 6 months out, 9 months out. You've just signed on for one, and you're going to get renewal information. They want to lock you in for many years. So first, I applaud Carol for not paying beyond the subscription that she wants and just ignoring those letters and paying for her 1 year. That's what she wants. She's done with the magazine. If they keep sending it to her, that's on the company. Mm-hmm. She isn't responsible for that bill. And if they try to bill her for that, that would be a violation of our consumer protection law. That's negative option, that they send you something and bill you after, mm-hmm. and you have to deny it. So, you know, keep track of that and make sure that she's paying attention to if she's getting any bills. But yes, magazines, anyone that you offer service with will resell your information. There are data miners out there that just try and figure out different things about people, and then they can do target marketing specific to the kinds of interests that someone has. So you can, you know, indicate to many companies that you don't want your name to be resold. Usually it's a box you have mm-hmm. to check if you're online signing up for something. There may be a box on the little tag that you sign up for the magazine. There's the Direct Marketing Association that you can contact and tell them that you don't want your name to be resold, and they will keep that for a number of years and you need to renew. Similar to No Call, but it's mailing list distributions that they'll do. So she can sign up for that. But there will still be companies that will share your information within their organization, their partnership, because they may have a number of magazines or other entities within their company. So just you know, keep track and make sure that you are asking them not to redistribute your information.
And I would say, too, Carol and others that write cancel and, you know, say that they don't want it anymore, it's probably a good idea to keep a copy of that invoice that they're returning, because as Marika, our on-air producer, pointed out, some people receive collection letters when they don't pay subscriptions beyond what they originally signed up for, because in some fine print somewhere it said, we're going to keep renewing it until, you know, you tell us otherwise. And so, you know, who knows? I'm guessing that there are a lot of different little departments or big departments working on these things. So if you write cancel on the front of something and it goes to one department, that might not actually, if it doesn't get entered there, another department isn't going to know that. So keeping some documentation is probably a good idea.
Right. You can write cancel. That's if you have an ongoing subscription. But if you've only signed up for a year and they continue to mail something and you haven't signed up for another year, they're in violation of a different consumer protection law. So if they follow up with collections, now they're compounding their problems and violations. So while documentation and keeping that is always something that we stress as being very important, in filing the complaint, if you get a bill for something you haven't signed up for and affirmatively ordered.
I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Larry will be back on Monday. And I'm talking with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Bureau of Consumer Protection. And we would love to have you join us at 1-800-642-1234. And let's go next to Lynn in Kenosha. Hi, Lynn.
Hello. Good morning. I'm calling because last week we flew out of Mitchell Airport on AirTran. It was a group of 12 of us, family, five kids under five. And we had some big suitcases. Now, we knew the weight issue, so now that wasn't a problem. But now there's a new thing where the width, length, girth, you know, the girth can only be 62. Well, we got, nobody checked anything, and we got down to Tampa and spent, you know, four nights down there. Well, when we came back and we're in the Tampa airport checking our bags, all of a sudden the tape measures come out. And two of the bags, my daughter's bag, she's got a five-week-old strapped to her chest, and the twins and the other one behind her, but two of the bags were couple inches over this girth, and so they were going to charge us $50 extra per bag, which in fact they did. We did pay it so we could get through. My daughter argued, got on the phone. She was an hour as we're walking through security and everything arguing, and finally the lady said, well, okay, we'll refund the $100. You know, look for it on your tax, on your credit card, which is my credit card. Well, it hasn't shown up yet. But the idea that it was sort of a bait and switch, they didn't say a thing in Milwaukee about it at all, got us there. Now we're just trying to get home. Where had it, you know, had we known Milwaukee, we had time to maybe, you know, put that away and go buy a smaller one right there at the airport, run home and switch, whatever, because we left plenty early. But we truly felt like it was a bait and switch situation. And I love AirTran. I've never had any problems with them. But this was like crazy.
All right. And so that's interesting what Lynn is relating, because I didn't know that there were, I mean, I know for carry-on luggage, there are obviously dimensions, but I thought for checked baggage, it was really by the weight generally.
Well, it can vary by airline, and that it really has gotten pretty confusing for travelers. You really need to look at the baggage policies when you're figuring in the cost of the trip, you know, because it can add another $200 mm-hmm. to your flight. This is something that we do not have jurisdiction over, and I'm thinking that the Federal Aviation Administration may. But if you call our consumer hotline, and Michelle has given that number, we can figure out where you should direct your complaint.
Sure, and go ahead and give it again, Michelle.
Sure, it's 1-800-422-7128.
Great. Thanks for sharing that, Lynn. And that's really good to know because, I always think about the weight, but not necessarily the dimensions.
We did, because this is getting to be such a big issue for travelers. Right before the Christmas holiday season, we sent our weights and measures inspectors out to all the airports in the state and checked those luggage scales to make sure that they were weighing accurately. And for the most part, there was one scale at Mitchell Airport, as I remember, that was a little bit off because something was leaning against the scale.
But kind of the equivalent of the thumb on
right,
the scale.
Right. But for the most part, the scales were very accurate. So travelers can be assured at least that the scales are wearing.
It's great
accurately.
To know that you guys, you know, do things like that proactively just to kind of keep track of things. Let's go to Harriet in Mineral Point next. Hi, Harriet.
Hi. I have an interesting one, and I was wondering how anybody would profit from this. I have a little tourist rental house in Mineral Point, and I got an email from somebody who had a London address wanting 10 days for six people. Well, that's quite a big booking, so I was really excited. But, it was obvious from the body of the email that it was not a native speaker of English. He had a London address. And I asked for the names of the people that would be staying, and it were very Americanized names like Mark Smith and Gloria Jones and that sort of thing. And so I said, well, I do have availability, And they wrote back and gave me two credit card numbers and said, please put half on one credit card and half on another. And they were very insistent. I mean, I don't really charge when they make the reservation. But they were insistent that this happened right away. And I thought, well, this sounds a little too good to be true. And so he wrote me again saying that they wanted the booking. And then I just ignored it because I thought, this is really going to lead to some problem. I know this. They didn't ask questions about the accommodations like most people do. Now, what would that be? How would they profit from that?
Yeah, that's a good question. Michelle?
Well, this is similar or could be similar to some of the other lottery-type fake check scams, but it's a travel version of the scam. It's international. International partner contacts you. It's kind of like some of the Craigslist or eBay-type scams. I'll pay you. Here's my credit card number. It may be a fake credit card. You may not wait to make sure it actually goes through and you get your funds. And then they'll say, oh, I'm going to cancel, but I've canceled that credit card, so can you pay me back in cash? Yep. Or can you refund me with a check or something? So it's another way of changing the terms of how the money was exchanged, and you give real money and they've given you fake money or not confirmed money in exchange.
So it sounds like, the same principle is at stake, that you are led to believe that you're being given something of value, and then you're either asked to give part of it back or refund it all. But really, the only money that's being exchanged is going from you to the scammer.
Right.
Well, it sounds like you probably avoided a bad situation there, Harriet.
I think I avoided some red tape and lots of problems.
Well, good. Well, okay. Glad to hear it. Hope you get some other bookings to make up for it. And talking about, that this is a prime time of year for travel and summer vacations, travel club and vacation scams seem to be pretty prevalent this time of year.
They are. Just recently, there was a big flyer that went out to a number of individuals, Wisconsin citizens, that talked about free airfare that they could get. But there were some details in very fine print or some missing details that it really turned out you had to sit through a 90-minute presentation. It was for not a timeshare, which is what we sometimes see, but a travel club. And so you just need to be cautious about that. Again, the theme of the day, I think, is too good to be true, something for free, those free tickets. They were going to have to sit through probably very high-pressure sales, get a travel club, and decide on the spot if they wanted it. But people need to consider, do I need a travel club?
Right.
Can I do my own bookings? What's involved? What's the fee for joining? And then what are the annual fees that you may have to pay? And how long are you a member for? So what are you locked into?
I think also situations like that, it's really easy to think, to get kind of blinded by the, ooh, I can get that free ticket to go wherever. And of course I can sit there. Even if you know exactly what's going to happen, you think, I can sit through 4 hours of a sales pitch for 3 days in the Rockies or 3 days on the beach, and I'll be able to resist. But again, And that's not to say those are all scams, but, you might actually, if you sign up, you will get, that part in the timeshare or something. But the high pressure sales can be a lot harder to withstand than people think. And it could end up costing you a lot more than if you just bought your own ticket to go sit on the beach for 3 days.
Right. And when you're making on the spot decisions about, okay, yeah, I can sign up for this timeshare, it's good for a year or two, but think long term. You are locked into that timeshare or travel club for a long period of time. Is it fit your, I guess, life plan, for lack of a better term, of how you want a vacation? Do you always want to go to the same spot every year? Or could you get, you know, this year it's a good deal, but next year could you get a better deal on your own outside of the travel club through just putting the package together on your own or a travel agent? You just need to think bigger picture, longer term than that moment.
Is this something you would do anyway, regardless of whether there were free tickets involved or not?
Mm-hmm.
I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Wisconsin Public Radio's Ideas Network, the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller, talking with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Bureau of Consumer Protection. And as always, we have plenty of people who would like to share their comments or ask questions. So let's go back to the phone. Mary in Appleton is next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question, and I'm not sure if I can mention the store, or if I can, I'd like to. I feel this was a bait-and-switch situation. They had a teeny, tiny price tag on a ring that I was very interested in. I came there with the money. I had talked the day before with a gentleman that ran the store, one of them. There was two people that run the store, and they gave me the price. I'm just going to say $200 because I really don't remember anymore. It was last year. And there was, they had some deal going on where if you found their billboard upside down, then you could get an extra 10% or something off. So I wanted to find that billboard first. So I found it, and I'm all happy. I'm going to go get my ring. I've got my money. I'm going to go pay for it to get there, and they're looking up because I had to order it my size, and I knew it was like an extra little bit more money to order it my size, no problem. Well, they look it up in the catalog, and it's like, say, $350, and they were not going to give it to me for the price that was on the tag on the one in the store. So the lady that was working there, must be his partner, wife, I don't know, she called him up. So I asked her, I said, could you please call him? Because he told me, we talked about it, he even wrote it on a piece of paper that was about the stone. And he said, yeah, okay. You know, he didn't sound happy about it, but he said yes. So then she got back on the phone with them. She came back to me, and she said, I'm not going to sell it to you for that. And I said, well, this sounds like bait and switch. I was upset. And she came around that counter and started poking her finger in my back. I was already willingly leaving. I was never going to go in that store again. And she got, like, kind of nuts on me, and it just, it was a horrible experience.
Okay, well, let's see what Sandy and Michelle have to say. So this sounds like, as Mary said, you know, there was one price advertised, and then when it was time to pay, it was a different price.
And I think she was in a good position to say, this is what the price was advertised at, and you should honor that price. And she recognized that because there needed to be an order, that there may, for a different size, that there may be an increased price. So, and had written documentation. That's something I would follow through on a complaint with, if she can't resolve it herself with the store. Because in Wisconsin, you do need to sell product for the lowest advertised price, unless there are any conditions or exclusions listed with that price. And it doesn't seem as though special orders were part of it, just sizing.
Which it could be. I mean, if they could say $200 for any in stock or something like that, but it sounds like there was nothing that indicated that.
From what she's giving us, that there weren't any of those special terms or conditions. So that would be something where we'd want to follow through to make sure that stores are honoring their lowest advertised price, their advertisements, their promotions. A year later might have a problem, but, you know, still put it on file, see what the store has to say for themselves, and we would be educating the store owners on the laws and what they need to do when they have promotions.
Great. Well, so Mary, it sounds like the first step is to file a complaint.
Hello?
Yes. So it sounds like
I said there was a price tag on the ring. It wasn't an advertised special. There was a price tag on the ring, and in order to send for it in my size, and then I said, well, what if I buy this one that's in the case that you have marked lower? And then he said yes to that, and she said no.
Yeah, the
so price, it was a mistake.
The price tag is still a matter of a lowest advertised price. There is a label on a shelf or a price tag on an item. So while we're using that term, we mean it interchangeably, it would still be something we'd want you to follow up and file the complaint on. And the two store owners making their decisions together, that's outside of our jurisdiction. We'll just let them know about the laws.
Well, and it sounds like, just to clarify, advertised price doesn't necessarily mean in a newspaper circular or something. It's whatever price is shown publicly to be associated with that product. Right.
Great. Yep.
All right. Thanks for that call, Mary. And there's also some gift card scam activity going on, particularly in the La Crosse area, right? Sandy, what's the story with that?
We heard from a number of consumers in the La Crosse area who, I believe they got an email saying, click on this link and you'll be eligible for a gift card for $100 and you can use it at Walmart and these well-known stores. Well, of course, once you click on the link, you're asked to provide information like credit card numbers, you know, name, address, things like that. Another example of if it sounds too good to be true, it probably
is,
as you said.
And so besides giving credit card information, is that also kind of a phishing thing to know that it's a good email too? Because if you're clicking on the link, it's showing that it's an email that someone's checking and using.
Right. Our advice is to be very, very careful of any kind of unsolicited email. When you click on a link like that, it's likely to divert you to some kind of fraudulent website where you'll be asked to share personal information, or clicking on the link can download malicious software onto your computer. And once you have that, you know, who knows what they can do to your computer.
We've also seen versions of this by text. So there's the email, but I know I've received one by text and it's get the $100 gift card, but then there's a processing fee they want you to pay. So again, that's not free.
Right.
I didn't win anything. I'm having to pay for my winnings.
Right. Again, our theme today is if it seems too good to be true, it probably is, talking about consumer scams and concerns with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Well, in the course of a week or a month, we act as a consumer many, many times, between paying bills for utilities, rent, or a mortgage, purchasing subscriptions or items online, or even going out to eat or buying groceries. There are a lot of transactions. Happily, most of them go smoothly and we get what we pay for. But those other times when there are problems and we can't get them addressed, we often need help to straighten it out. We're lucky to have knowledgeable and passionate people working on our behalf. Sandy Chalmers is the administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Thanks again for spending time with us, Sandy.
Thank you, Judith.
And Michelle Reinen is director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Michelle, great to have you here.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Well, as usual, we have lots of people that would like to join the conversation. So let's go right back to the phones. And Thomas in Chippewa Falls is next. Hi, Thomas.
Hello.
What's your question?
I had a quick question where very recently I had a recurring gym membership with a local gym here in town. And they actually contracted out that billing service through another billing agency. And then my year was ended and they were automatically renewing. And so I gave notice, verbal notice, to have that ended. I was on the phone with them for quite a while. Everything was going good. Then they told me I needed to give them written confirmation in addition to my verbal after spending about a half an hour on the phone. I kind of got every excuse under the book, and one of the reasons that they told me was the laws where the billing center was from applied, not the laws from my state, which just kind of struck a chord as being very wrong. So I'm curious as to when or how laws from another state would ever, you know, be valid.
All right. Thanks for that call, Thomas. So it sounds like Thomas is in Wisconsin, the gym is in Wisconsin, but this other agency that's working on their behalf is somewhere else. So how does that work?
Based on the information he's relayed and not seeing any documents, the transaction took place here. He has a relationship with a business that's physically located within the state of Wisconsin, signed the contracts here. So we would look at it as our laws apply. We do get into situations where we need to determine where the transaction took place. Depends on what the laws say about, you know, how certain things are defined as far as different transactions go. Internet, when things happen over the internet, that's really when whose jurisdiction is in place. And sometimes it's both states because the consumer is located one place, the business is in the other. Plus, then there are federal laws that can be applied to situations. So it's case by case. I hate to say that, but we really look at it when there are physical properties, face-to-face relationships that are happening, transactions, that's when we determine which law and whose jurisdiction.
And so, Thomas, the half hour you spent on the phone, that was with not people at the actual gym. It was this other agency in another state.
Correct, and part of the issue, and I did end up getting it resolved, but it took me, again, multiple hours to get it resolved, and it was in my favor. I did tell them, you know, I had to tell them that I would stop the automatic payments through my bank account with my bank if necessary, and then it was a multiple-hour process, but yes, everything was what I was told from the gym and what I was told from the billing agency were completely separate, and that was my problem.
And it also seems to me that, you know, something like a gym that's actually part of the community, you know, interacting with people, offering a service, they probably want to know, too, if people are having bad experiences with this third party that's supposed to be working on their behalf, because that can really damage their reputation.
I would think so. And in addition, the relationship that Thomas signed up for was with the gym.
Right.
It's the gym who decided to use a third party to do the billing service. So if he canceled his membership in accordance with whatever contract provisions he had, then it should be over. And in reality, it could potentially be the gym who would owe the money back and have to work with the third party to get everything to stop.
So I would think, Thomas, giving a call or stopping by the gym and letting them know the experience you had, they probably want to get that kind of feedback. Thanks for sharing that. Marty in Douglas County has a call about something that we hear about fairly often, and it's always good to remind people. Hi, Marty.
Hi, good afternoon. And I've actually thought of another question, if I could actually ask two.
Sure.
The original one, I know this is an old scam. My mother-in-law was befallen by this. A couple of years ago, she got a call, "Oh, Grandma, it's, you know, Jeff. I'm in Canada. It's your grandson. My car broke down. I need money. Send me money." It was the call from the grandson, granddaughter to the elderly person, asking for money because they're in some kind of calamitous situation. I think often it was, "I'm in jail," was the scam part of it. So whatever happened to that, is that still around? And my second question, so if we're signed up on the no-call list, who can still call us?
Mm-hmm.
What is still valid? If I say, "Please take me off your call list," does that get me off forever and ever? Please tell us what exactly, who can do what with no call.
Okay, thanks for that call, Marty. And why don't we start with that? We'll definitely cover the grandparent scam. But so who is still allowed to call numbers that are on the no call list?
Well, the no call list itself defines telemarketing as a solicitation call that is designed to encourage a person to purchase property, goods, or services. So that's actually a very narrow definition when you think about all the calls you get. Political calls are not covered under our state law.
Which we often hear from people. They really wish they were.
Yeah. But calls from charities or nonprofits, they're not soliciting you to purchase anything.
Right.
Marketing calls, survey calls, none of those are covered by the state no-call law.
But, so as Marty was saying, so those people that are able to legitimately call numbers that are listed on the no-call list, if you then say to, say, you know, a political party or a survey company or something like that, if you say, "Please take me off your list, I do not want to be called," should they be respecting that?
Yes, they should. There is a provision in the law that indicates that if you put it in writing to them that you want to be removed from their list, that they need to honor that.
But in writing,
their own no-call list.
Okay.
Yes, they need to do it in writing. So they should ask, you know, "How do I do this?" They can verbalize it and say, "Please take me off your list." You know, the law says put it in writing. You know, they can say, "Do you need me to, or are you just going to honor that?" But I would always follow it up, because then you have your track record and documentation, and they need to be keeping their own individual company no-call list as well.
Right. Here's an example of an area where, you know, our state no-call list is almost 10 years old now, and maybe it's time to update things a little bit. so often the calls that you receive are an automated recording, right. And there's nobody to say, please take me off
right.
the list,
Right, that's
too.
A good point.
Especially in the political calls, and you don't know whether it's a campaign or one of these independent groups. So, you know, things have really changed. Technology has changed, and marketing practices have changed since this law was enacted.
So, yeah, so it's kind of a work in progress, even after 10 years.
Maybe getting a little stale.
Yeah. And, I mean, but also keeping up with changes in how communication happens. Now there's a no text list as well that's part of the no call list.
Right.
So that's keeping that's acknowledging what 10 years ago no one really imagined was that we'd be getting unwanted texts as well as unwanted calls.
Right. And what Judith is talking about is a new protection under the state no-call law, which says that if your cell phone's on the no-call list, you should not be receiving unsolicited text messages.
And I actually have to say, I was in a situation where I started getting text messages that were like trivia questions. And then at the end it said, call, text, stop if you don't want to receive these. Well, kind of following the advice that we often give people, I didn't want to respond because I didn't know if that would then just prove that this was a real cell number and someone was looking at the text. So I didn't respond. Stop. I kept getting them. And then I saw online that often there was a charge associated with those and that it might mean that I was getting charged $9.99 a month for some service that I may have inadvertently signed up for in the fine print of something else. And so I called AT&T and sure enough, there were charges for $9.99. on my card that they refunded. But had I not known that and had I not Googled that phone number that it was coming from, I wouldn't have known. And AT&T said, yes, you should have texted stop. But I thought, so, you know, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do because I thought I wasn't supposed to communicate with these people at all.
We just worked with U.S. Cellular on a similar case, and they were very cooperative and ended up refunding about $64,000 to state consumers. So we're thankful to them for their cooperation. But something some people might want to think about doing is blocking third-party charges, especially on their smartphones. We've heard from a number of people who give their smartphones to their kids to play games and stuff. And, you know, those ads pop up
yep.
and the kids click. And before you know it, they're being charged for all kinds of things.
Right.
So if you're doing that kind of thing, you may want to check with your carrier on blocking third-party charges altogether.
And that's what AT&T did for me. But it actually comes, like the email I got confirming it said that it's parental controls, which I thought, well, I need to protect myself from myself, apparently. But it's good to know because you don't necessarily think that there's a charge associated with those things, but it might be representative of that. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller, talking with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen about consumer protection issues. And let's go to Susan in Oregon next. Hi, Susan.
Hello. I have a small business, and I advertise on yellowpages.com and yellowbook.com. And earlier in May, I got a phone call from a company calling itself Yellow Pages Resources saying that my invoice was overdue and that I needed to pay now or else my service would be interrupted. And at the time, I was a little confused by the name because it was, and I said to her, well, is this yellowpages.com or yellowbook.com? She said, no, it's Yellow Pages Resources. And I said, well, I don't think I'm doing any advertising on your with your company. And she said, well, we have a recorded message from you stating that you agreed to services. So then I said, well, it could be that I was confused at the time and thought that you were Yellow Book or yellowpages.com because you sound very similar. And she got very snippy with me over the phone saying their name did not sound anything like Yellow Pages or yellowbook.com, you know. And so I said, well, I do not want to continue any services. If I owe something up to date, let me know what I owe, and I do not want to continue this account because I might have signed up for it inadvertently. So she said that she could take a payment over the phone, and she figured out, originally she was telling me that I owed $497.99. But, she would, she would just charge what was due as of that date, which was $189.99. So I said, well, I want a letter in writing from you. Before I pay any money, I want a letter in writing from you stating that once I pay this amount that I will receive no further bills from you. So she said, well, she could fax a letter to me. And this whole deal took place over several days because she faxed a letter to a copy shop because I don't have a fax machine. So then the next day I go there, and it wasn't a letter that I had asked for. It was basically a bill stating the first amount and then how they were reducing it for me and that I only owed this amount, and it was listing all the services they were providing.
And so, Susan, how did you end up resolving that then?
Well, what I ended up doing is I actually started Googling. I Googled their name, and I started looking to see, first of all, if there was any advertising that they had done for me. I couldn't find any, but I found a blog that somebody had put on stating that they had almost fallen to this same scam. And there were letters from all these people, and all the amounts were identical to the amount they were asking me for. And so it must be a scam. And they even have a logo on their letterhead that looks like the Yellow Pages with the walking fingers, you know.
Sure. So it sounds like they're really trying to play on that that respected name. Is our advertising scam something that you all hear about fairly often?
Well, we do. We definitely hear about the Yellow Pages fake invoice scam quite a bit for that target businesses and small businesses, and that's that they have placed an ad for this business and need to pay for it, just as Susan was relaying to us. And there are other fake invoice scams out there targeted at businesses or charities and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Copier, toner, different services, telecommunication services and things. So you really need to be in communication with your financial department if it's separated. If your purchasing is different than your financing, right. If you're that big of a small business, so you don't miss things. And make sure that you're actually verifying who the vendors are that you're using and what the services are that you're getting. And one of the fake invoices that came out recently indicated very small print in yellow highlight that it wasn't a bill, but it looked just like a bill. And that yellow highlight, what that does is when it gets copied to go to finance, it doesn't come off on the copier. So the yellow highlight gets missed.
So it's just fine print that's been copied, so even less legible.
Right. So you really need to pay attention and be in communication.
And again, you know, this just points to what we talked about earlier. These are people that are making a living, and I'm putting that in big quotes, by coming up with these scams. So the fact that they would think of, you know, well, we'll put this yellow highlight on the original, but we know most people are going to make a copy to submit it for payment or whatever, you know, they're counting on the fact that they can fool you, or they can create confusion and benefit from it.
Right. Absolutely.
Let's go to Shelley in Madison next. Hi, Shelley.
Hi, I'm calling about an email that I received. I actually got several of them from people I know, but these people didn't really send them. And it's the same email. It's about work from home and earn, you know, several thousand dollars a month. And but when the email just says, this is amazing, and then you click on it, and it looks like a news website or a newspaper website. So it looks very legitimate, and it's an article about this woman that earned like $10,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when you kind of look into it further, it's a program where you pay a certain amount of money, and they set you up with creating links from one website to an ad or something like that. But anyways, I noticed that the line, this is amazing, because first I thought it came from the person I know, but then it was like three different people sent it to me with that same line. So then I emailed my uncle, who was one of the three people, and he said no, he didn't send it. So it's kind of concerning that they're getting into people's, you know, contacts.
Right.
And so I'm just wondering if you know how that works or what you can do to protect yourself from that.
Well, either their email has been hacked into or their Facebook account has been hacked into, something like that. And the best defense against that is frequently changing your password and using strong passwords, as we discussed earlier.
And really being careful if you do receive one, don't click on that link. If if there's any question in your mind, and usually, I mean, I think we all get, if you have an email account, you're going to get one of those eventually. You know, you can kind of tell, like Shelley was saying, you know, the subject is like, this is amazing, or you have to look at this. And then there's basically no message. It's just a link. That's not how people generally communicate. So, you know, using that filter of, okay, wait, does this really, even though it says it's from someone I know, does this really look like how that person would communicate with me?
And those work-at-home scams have really increased as the economy mm-hmm. has been kind of stalled out. And typically what they'll do is say, we'll send you a check, and here's a list of equipment you should buy, you know, a laptop and all this stuff. And, of course, you deposit the check, and it's
sure.
fake. And
sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And similar to that, just because we didn't follow up with Marty's,
yes,
is the grandparent
scam. Yes,
thank you. The grandparent scam can come by email, and it's more the friend scam, where you think your friend is emailing you from London, and they've just been right. beaten up or mugged, and now they need to get out, and can't you help me? And it looks like the email is coming from
right.
your friend.
Right.
Or it comes in the version of a phone call to the grandparents, and they know all these details about the grandchild, and please don't tell anybody that I'm, you know, don't tell mom and dad that I'm in danger.
That's a big part of it is they really don't want you to check with someone else.
Right, because then you're going to find out it's not true. And Shelley did it right in her version of the work at home. She contacted one of the people
right.
using a different form of communication
right.
to check it out. Did you send me this link? Are you okay? It,
right.
it goes hand in hand, whether it's a work at home scam or a grandparent scam, or I'm traveling and I'm in danger. But it's all a way to get your personal information or your money.
Right. And Michelle, thanks for taking us back to the grandparent scam, because one thing that I was talking or thinking about as we were talking about, you know, security on things like Facebook, LinkedIn, you know, there's a lot of information there that someone could use if they're able to get into someone's account to see photos, to see, you know, that so-and-so posted happy birthday grandma on Facebook. And so now you've got a name, you know, and an age of a grandchild and a gender to be able to do those things. So, you know, thinking about, I think one of you said earlier, think about what information you have out there, because that will give you an idea of if there's a breach, what kind of information might be used to confuse you on things. Let's take a quick question from Charlene in Milwaukee. Hi, Charlene.
Hi. I've been listening. All of these calls are extremely interesting. I have a real question. I'm in the middle of filing a complaint to the state. I have POA through my mom. She's in her 80s, and I just came back from having her files looked at, and we found that a predator came through her home, and she is paying a note now that she can't afford on money she never got.
Mm. So, and so when you say POA, it's power of attorney. So,
yes,
you,
ma'am.
Yeah.
Yes,
so,
ma'am.
So you're going through your mother's files and found out that so she's now somehow she's committed to paying a mortgage, or
she is paying a second mortgage from someone she knew, and he was a business manager for one of our businesses, not my mother's business, but a family business, and he came to her home from what she was able to recollect, because she's 83 now, and actually had her sign three different kinds of notes, contracts, and the third contract that he had her sign on gave her nothing. And
okay.
he told her that it was for the business.
Okay, we're really short on time, Charlene, so I want to give Michelle and Sandy a chance to respond of where you should be going with that complaint.
This may be something you'd want to follow up with law enforcement
on. It sounds like it, especially elder abuse.
There may
issues.
Be criminal activity here. But the other thing is, if you have an elderly relative, friend, neighbor, realize that they are the most frequently targeted victims of these criminals.
Right. Thank you so much. And good luck with that, Charlene. And amazingly enough, we are out of time. Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen, always great resources. Sandy, thanks so much for coming.
Thanks, Judith.
And Michelle, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
And we'll definitely have you back. It seems like no matter how frequently or for how long we have you guys, we have more than enough to talk about. Unfortunately, because there are a lot of scams and all kinds of new variations on old scams, but also because you have so much great information to share. Tomorrow at 11, I hope you'll tune in for Garden Talk. Milwaukee gardening guru Melinda Myers joins us to share great advice on growing a variety of plants in some surprising types of containers. And Larry will be back behind the mic on Monday. We'll be happy to have him back. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. I hope you'll stay tuned for a lot more great programming here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned.